Good, and council, can you hear both council?
I can hear pretty well.
Thank you.
Justice Miller Lerman appearing by WebEx, excuse me, thanks very much.
And is it Ms. Vogt?
Yes, Your Honor.
And you can hear and we can hear you. So with that, do either council have any questions before we begin?
I do not.
I do not either.
Thank you very much. Mr. Fogarty, then, good morning to you. You may proceed.
I don't know if my setup here is working, but I got pictures of Pearl Gewinner over a couple of years while she was in assisted living that was going to be germane to my argument on statute of limitations. Do you see the pictures? They're just sweet little pictures of her.
Are these pictures contained in the record?
Yes.
We're not seeing them.
Okay, then I won't use this setup, which we thought we would get working, but that's fine. The pictures are germane to the statute of limitations is because if you saw them in, I think it's 239, she's just a beautiful woman for 91, 2 years old. She turns herself out perfectly every day, and her hair is gorgeous. And it's because she took a weekly session with a hairdresser because she wanted to look good all the time. Now, why does that have anything to do with the statute of limitations on my $138,000 claim filed in June? Well, it has this to do with it. Her hairdresser, if she had been owed some money at the time of Pearl's death, would have been in the same boat and the same remedy as Pearl's lawyer, Fogarty. And we would have a claim which we would be processing because Pearl was a settler of her trust. Her trust had all her assets. The filing on the estate was a penniless pursuit. But because she was a settler, her debt is handled not under the uniform probate code with all sorts of funny interlocking dates at which your claim dies. It's handled under the trust code at 30.38.50 sub A sub 3, where when somebody owes you money that's a settler at their death, you have a year to file. And of course, who will you file with? You file with the trust. That's exactly what we did. It was a registered trust. It came 32 days after her death. And at that point, for the next 5.5 years, the boss of the trust was a trustee. And he never gave up power over the trust until we settled all that fight between unappointed personal representatives, Bruce for the 2012 will, and Paul and Marlis for the will of 2005. And it took all 5.5 years before Marlis finally became appointed a PR and issued a public notice to creditors. Of course, by that time, we were also already at issue in the instant litigation in which Bruce and I are looking for fees. And discovery had, I think, even started. So that particularly defined our rights. The hairdresser and the lawyer were in the same boat, but it was a very friendly boat. There was no, our position is that there was no terminating of there was a stay of the running of all statutes. There was no triggering of it in any respect. All the attorneys, after she died, were looking for money to filing in either the trust, the conservatorship, or the penniless estate. But we all had motions, applications, and anything else that immediately were self-actuating, as I would claim are fully developed issues demanding payment. To make it more fully developed, people complained about one another. I complained, Paul objected to my fees. So we had a bunch of bills that were handled all through the trust. And the trustee just stood back and said, I won't do anything for anybody until I'm told to by a court. So that's how that developed. If the uniform so, trust code. Yes.
Is there any question about the size of the bill that you submitted?
Nobody made that objection except Marlis and Paul have from the get-go wanted me to get nothing. Well, Marlis wasn't that way bad until about 6 months after. But it's either zero or 138. Nobody has lodged any objections other than they think I should get zero. And then when it was tried down below trying to think down below, of course, it was that I should get nothing. And there's an argument made that I did everything I did was unnecessary. And so I basically am presenting, and Bruce is presenting, with zero reward for a lot of good heart, good faith work for a very deserving lady that needed somebody to stand up for. I will go on to say that what role the
Mr. Fogarty?
Yes, sir.
Is your claim for fees you incurred after Pearl's death, where you're representing personal representative Mr.
Teachman?
Yes. Is that governed by 30-3893 of the trust code, or 30-2481 and 82 of the probate?
You know, I have used 3893 as the heart and soul of my case. The fact that human decency would favor Pearl and her trust and her mighty champions over the children who were looking out for their own interest very vigorously. And I have, in my brief, I have used that kind of as a icing on the cake. I have also analyzed the devil out of the 81-82 process, which I think is how you set the fee.
Which one is proper? 2481 or 3893?
Well, because we never got appointed, I guess all of our work has to be covered by 81 and 82.
But you concede, correct, that there's no assets in the state. 2481 talks about
there's nothing in the probate.
The fees from the estate, but there's nothing in the probate state, correct?
Well, that's getting awful technical, and we think that's pedophagy that we have tried to fight against by saying that if you have to, rather than get directly at that trust where it should be, and our claim on our petition bears two captions, the trust and the estate. And the only time I left the trust out was when I was ordered by the court at the time to reply to the objections, don't be using this trust anymore. So my position is that trust owes the money. And as a fallback position, you use 3893 and get the children and go judgments against them, which I can go collect against the trust. I think that's circuitous and pedophagy that is not just and it's not equitable. The tool to get those fees, I feel, is a proper application of 82 and the 7-factor test.
Was there a court? Don't we have a court order from an earlier case that you did not have authority to do anything for Pearl other than challenge a guardian?
That's an interesting order because not even the trial judge ever brought it up as a bar to doing the normal things you do for a client. That could not be taken that far because it is clearly an illegal order and nobody took it that far. The Eighth Circuit looked over that and they also were told that in argument. They never used that as a rationale in the 2015 appeal. And when when I had to defend against bad faith, that was, they didn't have to on that, and that said that was not in bad faith.
Excuse me, how is it legal order? If the county court entered it and it was affirmed by the Court of Appeals, would give that some validity? And if we do, how do you have authority to draft a will for Pearl when there's a court order that says that falls outside the scope of what she has the capacity to hire you to do?
The court cannot make a determination that she had no such capacity. She could not make that an order under the conservatorship. 26, 37, 3, and 5, the court cannot order you can't make a will. And boy, I've done an awful lot of briefing, and that's why I want you to get together and write some literary gem using the old that old Irish biddy, Mrs. Gahagan, didn't like any of her kids, and she wrote a will through two guardianships and really straightened this out. But it is a liberty right of somebody like Pearl, who is sharp as a tack, and like Widow Gahagan, to make a will under guardianship. Gahagan under two of them. And the Supreme Court said those wards, guardianships meant absolutely nothing. I think it's time for the court to make sure that even though the practicing probate bar looks at somebody who comes in and says of liberty right for a ward to make a will is somehow an outlier, somehow a redheaded stepchild. That's the way Teachman and I were treated. We had the law right on that. And a proof of it was that even during the trial of our trial, one of my experts, Houghton, his firm had actually had one up in district court in which it was a ward, there was a guardianship, and they won because you have the right to make the will. Here we got to talk about chief judges. Great case. Monin versus Orr. Says that the ability and the capacity to exercise a liberty right, you exercise it. You have the right. And then you test whether you really truly have the capacity at a factual hearing.
Mr. Fogarty, I think your time has expired.
Wow.
So thank you very much. Ms. Vogt, good morning to you.
Good morning. First, I want to remind this court, as it well knows, that it may affirm the county court's decision on any grounds, even if they are not the same grounds that the county court used in finding their order. This is a case in which Mr. Fogarty should not receive any fees on the pre-death fees, even if you look at the statute that says he might be able to claim them against the trust. As the court just brought up, he was under an order at all times that his representation was limited to the matters that are set forth in the statute that says he may challenge the guardianship or the acts of the guardian. And he even admitted in the briefing in the very first time that this case was on appeal that they had abandoned that aspect of any representation. So the county court didn't bring it up, but everything that he did was in violation of that order. And for that reason, he should not get any pre-death fees. Regarding the post-death fees, Mr. Fogarty has argued strenuously that they were acting in good faith. But good faith is not a subjective standard.
Counsel, did Judge McDermott find that Mr. Fogarty and Mr. Teachman acted in good faith?
He did not. He didn't. He found that although it was close in his second order where he amended the June order, he said that although it was close, he wasn't going to find it was bad faith. He did not, however, find that it was good faith.
So there's something in between bad faith and good faith.
That's a question that I cannot answer, but I can tell you that it wasn't, that even if it was in good faith subjectively, it doesn't meet the other standards for getting fees for representing an estate, which requires first that there be good faith, and secondly, that the expenses incurred were necessary and that they were for the benefit of the estate.
As the county, where does the "for the benefit of the estate" language come from?
It's from cases interpreting statute section 30-2464. And that's a case that Mr. Fogarty did not discuss in his brief. I mean, a statute that Mr. Fogarty did not discuss. Section 30-2464 makes the personal representative a fiduciary. It provides that he is to act as a fiduciary and that he is to use the authority conferred upon him or her in any order for the best interests of successors to the estate. In this case, both Mr. Teachman and Mr. Fogarty completely disregarded that. As came out at trial, the only difference between the distribution under the trust and under the will that Mr. Fogarty continued to fight for, even after the Court of Appeals said that the trust was the controlling instrument, was that there were penalties in the 2012 will that could have been enforced against Paul. There was also evidence adduced at trial that Mr. Fogarty had on multiple occasions demonstrated his animosity toward Paul. This whole matter should have been done in 2014 when Paul and Marlis, the only heirs or the only beneficiaries of the trust, other than a couple of cousins with small bequests, reached a settlement agreement that could have been reformed by the court to get rid of any objectionable provisions about whatever was supposed to happen to Mr. Fogarty. But Mr. Fogarty would not give up fighting to try and enforce that will so that he could enforce the parts of the will that punished Paul. So
what's the status of, and I'm not going to remember the exact language of this, is a paraphrase, to be specified charity for the Omaha Jewish community. Wasn't that added to the will, but not a part of the trust?
Well, it was added to the will, but it was only in, it only came into play if one or both of the children challenged the 2012 will. And under Nebraska law, if you have reasonable cause to challenge a will, then a penalty clause is not enforceable. Under the circumstances where she was under a guardianship conservatorship, where an expert selected by Mr. Fogarty found that she was not competent, that should have been good grounds to challenge that 2012 will. So the enforcement of the punishment clause, which would have brought in the any Jewish synagogue or charity, would not have ever come into play. And in fact, to forestall the 2014 settlement, that's when Mr. Fogarty and Mr. Teachman reached out and appointed the Jewish Federation Foundation to be the designated beneficiary. They created standing because their own standing at that point was uncertain. They worked at all times to keep the estate from being distributed under the trust. This has been in litigation for 7 years now, and this is, I believe, the third appeal. It's time that we end this. I would like to ask this court, when it is writing its order, that whatever it decides, that it come to a final decision. So we believe that Mr. Fogarty shouldn't get any pre-death fees because he was acting at all times in violation of a valid court order, which was sustained by the Nebraska Court of Appeals. He doesn't get to say that was an invalid order. The county court should be sustained on giving him no fees.
You believe that the county court order in 2011, affirmed by the Court of Appeals, setting forth the scope of what Mr. Fogarty's representation could be?
Yes, I do.
You've talked about how you believe that impacts the claim for pre-death fees. Do you think that has any impact on the claim for POSTA?
The fees for post-death representation, I don't believe do come under that order, but they come under the fact that none of them were necessary, none of them benefited the estate, none of them were for the purpose of maintaining the estate. Rather, it cost the estate a large sum of money in defending it and getting it to the point where we could actually get a settlement ratified. We had to go all the way through the Court of Appeals. They had to affirm that the trust was the controlling instrument. And during all that litigation, Mr. Fogarty was charging fees, making multiple filings in the appellate court at the same time he was making additional filings in the county court. He worked on this case far beyond what was necessary and far beyond any benefit whatsoever to the successors and the heirs. And that is not what a fiduciary is supposed to do. Mr. Teachman should have allowed us to complete the settlement in 2014, even if some of the terms were reformed.
Would you concede, though, that a nominated personal representative could seek to probate, to have a will probated, to be ultimately unsuccessful, and to still be entitled to some fees under 2480?
I would concede that there are circumstances under which that would be appropriate. I do not concede that this is a situation where it would be appropriate. For example,
is there a benefit to the estate in that case if it's, the effort is ultimately unsuccessful?
Well, it depends. In the Reimers case, even though the nominated personal representative was not successful in probating the will that some of the children wanted versus what the other children wanted, once an agreement was reached among the heirs, then he sought his fees for everything that was done before the settlement. So it wasn't to a direct benefit of the estate, but on the other hand, it wasn't in direct violation of the rights of the successors. As soon as the beneficiaries reached a settlement regarding the will, he stopped his representation and he applied for his fees for the work that he had done before, and the court correctly found that he was entitled to that. But in this case, Mr. Fogarty's actions at all times were to defeat the efforts of the two children who were the heirs and beneficiaries under both the trust and the 2012 will. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I don't believe we have any time for rebuttal. There is no time for rebuttal. So that concludes arguments in In Re Estate of Gaventer. Counsel, thank you very much for participating by WebEx. You are now excused and may leave the WebEx portal.
Thank you.
We will proceed to the next case of the day, which is In Re Interest of Material. Thank you.